I want to welcome to the Line of Fire microphones my thoroughly Jewish host, Scott Volk.
It's time for the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, good Friday to everybody. This is Scott Volk coming to you live from Dr. Brown's studio offices in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's an amazing privilege that I have every time that I have the opportunity to host the Line of Fire show. I want to encourage you all to be praying for Dr. Brown. He's currently traveling from Amsterdam to Italy today, where he's got an intensive ministry schedule ahead of him. It blows me away that no matter where he is in the world, he really tries to do these shows live. And sometimes he's actually setting his alarm in the middle of the night simply to get up to host this show. He loves being on the air, and it blesses me beyond measure that he's entrusted me with these few hours with you today. And we have an amazing 2 hours ahead of us. If you're unable to listen for the full 2 hours, you'll want to catch this online because our guests are incredibly compelling. I want you to buckle your seatbelts because today's show is going to be special. I want to give you just a little preview of what we've got ahead, challenge you a little bit from the Word, and then we're gonna have our first guest coming to you live from Jerusalem. Her name is Lisa Miara. She'll be our first guest after the break. She's got an absolutely riveting story of how her son was a victim of terror in Israel. And she'll tell us what happened to her life and her son's life as a result of that incident, all of which, by the way, was captured on video. First time I saw this video, I was flabbergasted. But I had the privilege of meeting her when I was in Israel earlier this year, and I was reduced to tears as I sat across from her, and she told me her incredible story. In addition to Lisa, we'll be able to chat with Samuel Whitfield, who is organizing a very interesting conference and tour in Jerusalem this summer. You'll want to hear about it. You'll be invited to join us. I will be with him, actually, on that tour and in that conference. And then during the second hour, we're going to have New York Times bestselling author Joel Richardson with us on the show. He's recently written a book. It's a new book entitled When a Jew Rules the World. It's a book that I was privileged to endorse and one that I think is a must-have for every believer in Messiah Jesus. So I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. For those of you who've never heard me before, my name is Scott Volk. I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus, Yeshua. And the Lord radically transformed our family's lives back in the early 1970s when my mother and father had an incredible encounter with the Messiah of Israel and the Savior of the world. My dad was a successful stockbroker on Wall Street. My mother was living the life of a American Jewish princess, and the Lord radically came and transformed their lives. And for that, I will never, ever be thankful enough. At the age of 10 in 1975, I accepted Yeshua into my heart. Never, ever, ever had a burden for Israel or the Jewish people until about 5 years ago when I was flying back from Israel and felt like I was radically apprehended by God. Although I didn't see him or hear his voice audibly, it was as if he was sitting next to me, pointing his finger at me, saying, "You're a Jew, and I've called you to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And it's my privilege today to be serving the Lord and to be serving the believers in the land of Israel and serving the church, being able to trumpet God's heart for Israel, a message that he's given me to churches and conferences and congregations around the world. So today is a privilege and an honor because we're going to be having an amazing woman, a Jewish woman from Israel on the line, giving her story. I want to encourage you, if you'd like to call in, our lines will be open for any questions that you would have for Lisa. I will introduce her on the other side of the break. Thanks for joining us today on a special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Friday.
We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, don't be confused. You're hearing some of the music that you might normally hear on a Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but today is, in fact, Friday. But if you listened to Dr. Brown yesterday coming to you live from Amsterdam, he made Thursday, you've got questions, we've got answers, so that I could take Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on this Thoroughly Friday. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We're calling it a special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on Friday. And our first guest today is an absolutely incredible woman, and I have the privilege of introducing you to her. Lisa Miara is coming to us live from Jerusalem, Israel. Lisa, Shabbat Shalom to you.
Shabbat Shalom, Scott, and thank you for the opportunity and the honor to be on the program with you tonight.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing for me and such an incredible privilege that you are with us. There are people who are listening to us across the United States and around the world through the internet, and this is also on live radio here in America, but you don't sound like you have an Israeli accent. You're coming from Jerusalem. Where do you originate from, Lisa? And maybe tell us how you ended up in Israel.
Well, you know, the word of God in Psalm 23 says he leads us, the Hebrew says, he leads us in circles of righteousness for his name's sake. And I look back at my life, Scott, I've lived in Jerusalem for 40 years now, and all I can see is the hand of God and his leading from the time when I grew up in my very Orthodox Jewish world in England, as you can hear in my accent.
Yes.
And I can remember one day when I was around about 13 years old, in a tiny little cinema of those days, I watched the story of the Exodus. And I sat there, and somehow, as a young kid, I knew from that point that my place was in Israel.
Amazing.
And I was in an incredibly, you know, vibrant Anglo-Jewish community. School, shul, everything. And for much of those sort of the years of 16 to 18 in particular, or 15, 17, incredible pressure to stay in England. If you need to go to Israel, go and work on a kibbutz for 3 months and get this kind of obsession out of your head, and then go back to Oxford University and stay there. And there was just something in me that knew, if I don't go now, as soon as I finish high school, which for me was around the age of 17 and a half, it won't happen. Mm. And it was one of those sort of lech lecha, go you moments where, in naivety, and I'm sure, you know, I didn't know what I was going to or in, but just in that simple place, I picked up and went and have never looked back. And today I can say I'm a exceptionally proud Jerusalemite. Again, the Tehillim, the Book of Psalms, says to consider Jerusalem above our chiefest joy. Mm. And it's an incredible joy and an honor to be called a city, you know, a citizen of this incredible, complex, but incredible city. Mm. And I have kids here and I have grandkids here. And the years in England are a long way away, to be honest, Scott. 40
Amazing.
Years ago.
Amazing. Yeah. So as a woman with children and grandchildren who were basically raised in the land of Israel, and I know you're very, very glad to be a Jerusalemite, as you just said, but has your time in Israel been easy? Has it lived up to your expectations? Did you go with your eyes open? How do you feel about Israel now that you've been there for 40 years?
I'm going to start with something that happened in 1998, and I'm going to give you a response to something that happened and then work back and then work forward.
Okay.
And obviously feel free to cut in and direct me, but in 1998, my eldest son was in an attempted lynch, in other words, an attempted murder by some rioting Hamas students. It was very pre-planned. It was filmed, photographized in the journal, et cetera, et cetera. And we can possibly come back to this later, but it was such a horrible, life-changing event that in actual fact, the British ambassador tried to intervene because for some reason, and it's a long story, but for some reason, there were accusations against my son that as an Israeli soldier, he had a weapon. He should have at least wounded 20 of the Palestinians for the sake of the honor of the idea. So my son was knocked out cold and he was, you know, beaten to a pulp, so this wasn't an option. But there was such an attack on my son, and I started to defend him overnight. And in the end, the British ambassador came in, and he said to me, Lisa, you're a British citizen, your son is a British citizen, I am willing to take you out and to take you back to the UK right now, get you out of this. My instant reaction, and I'm choosing the word very carefully, reaction, Scott, was, yes, let's get out of here. I'm mad. I deserve more than this. My son's in the IDF. Take care of us. Don't try and put him in prison in this situation of counterterrorism. And suddenly I knew if I left, I would never return. And I stayed it out. And so I can say it has not been an easy journey. I don't know what the anticipations of a 17-year-old coming out of an Orthodox world, thrown into the secular world of university. I have no idea what my expectations were, but there's absolutely no way that the reality and the expectations correlate or even parallel. But all I can say is, this is my land, and this is my people, and this is where I am planted, and this is where I stay.
Amazing.
It's, you know, we had Shavuot last week.
Yes.
The story of Ruth. And yes, I'm Jewish, but it's a commitment to primarily to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And because you're in commitment and allegiance and alignment with him, then you're able to say to Israel, where you go, I'll go. Your place is my place, and where you die, I'll die. Mm. And that's what I'm in for here. Where this nation goes, I'm bound up with this nation and this people and this city.
Mm. What an incredible story. I definitely want to get back to the story of your son at some point, but the remarkable thing to me is I'll never forget. My life was deeply impacted quite in an unplanned way when you and I ended up in the same office building in January, and you sat across from me telling me this remarkable story. But as I looked at your face before you walked in, I would have never known all that you and your family have been through. And I wonder how true that is for many that are just simply even walking down the streets of Jerusalem today. How many people have made the commitment to move themselves and their families over to Israel, young and old alike, who feel the call back to the land that God promised to our forefathers, yet that does not come without a price. And it just blows me away, Lisa, that you can look so whole and talk so whole, yet have been through such a devastating, in the natural, devastating time. How does that happen? We've got about 2 minutes before our first break here. But before we lead into the next break, tell our people how you've survived an assassination attempt on your son and much more, and still desire to be there.
I can give you a very, very quick answer. The conclusion of the Torah portion, Naso, the lifting up of this week, ends with what we call in Hebrew the Birkat HaKohanim, the Aaronic blessing. And that is v'yichunecha, and he will lift his face up upon you, and he will be kind to you. He will be graced. I've seen the kindness of the Lord in the land of the living. That's it. Nothing to do with me. The kindness of God in the land of the living.
Wow, Lisa. Amazing. I want to get back to this on the other side of the break. It's just an incredible blessing that you're joining us today. And friends, if you would like to join me on our next trip to Israel with Together for Israel, we're doing a 10-day tour from November 28th through December 7th, and I'm going to try to even twist Lisa's arm maybe to meet us for a day. You'll get a chance to meet her other other leaders in the land of Israel, both Arab and Jewish people who have a heart for Israel and a heart for God in Israel. And that trip is November 28th through December 7th. You can go to my website, togetherforisrael.org, to find out more about our trip to Israel. This is the same trip that Dr. Brown and I led last May. Dr. Brown won't be with me this time, but he's already actually written a letter saying, hey, you should go with Scott. So it would be wonderful to have you with us. Log on to our website, www.togetherforisrael.org, to find out more information about that trip. Stay with us on the other side of the break. We're going to find out more about Lisa Miara's story and how you can get involved with what she's doing. Shabbat Shalom.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm full of this bitterness and this wrath and this anger and this rage and this hate. And physically, it makes you ill. Bitterness just grows and grows and grows like cancer inside you. Inside, I was eaten up.
Wow, that's the voice of Lisa Miara. Lisa, I'm not sure if you even have heard that recently, but I've been doing a little stalking, Lisa, online, and I found that audio clip that was attached to a video. But you mention bitterness. As a mother who walked through an incredible story with your son, what can you tell us about bitterness? Was this near death experience for your son, this near lynching, a cause of bitterness in your heart? How did you deal with this initially? If there's anything more of the story that you'd like to tell our listeners, go ahead and do that. But I'd really like to dig into this issue of bitterness and how you dealt with it.
I'll set the stage just by saying that my son was coming home from an army base, which was a stone's throw from Ramallah, which is a very Hamas-based town with a Hamas-affiliated university called Birzeit. And there were rioting Palestinian students who were coming down looking for a soldier to kill. And that soldier was my son. And I received a phone call from his father 2 minutes before 5 o'clock. You know, my heart is kind of pounding even as I recall this all these years later. And his father and I were actually divorced. And he said to me, Asaf has been in attempted lynch. He's in the operating rooms of Hadassah Ein Kerem, a Jerusalem hospital. He's alive but very badly injured. And although, as Jerusalemites, since my kids were 4 years old, and at that point they were between 18 and 14, we had buried Jerusalemites, very close friends who had been murdered through what we're referring to as an intifada. Mm. Nothing can ever prepare anybody for this. And as a mother, when you send a kid out, whether it's to school in the morning or to eat pizza or wherever it is, or to the army, and, you know, we say in Hebrew, Chas v'chalila, lo aleinu, sort of God forbid that it happens to us, you either get the worst of all news that your loved one has been killed, or you receive somebody home that's been very badly injured. You have no coping mechanism. I need to personalize it. I had no coping mechanism. There was nothing in my life history, knowledge, or experience that could prepare me to deal with a son who is mentally, physically, and I would say actually even spiritually injured by this. Mm. And as a mother, I justified my rage. I'd never had any bad interactions with Arabs, if we want to call them Palestinians, to that point. I had never been aware of any hate or anything. That was not on my radar. That was not my life experience. In fact, I had worked in the import-export business inside Ramallah, inside these places, in total comfort and feeling of safety as a woman alone for many years. But when you see your kid beaten up, and you know that his life is actually wrecked, there was something in me that was able to say, okay, this is the way you feel, and you're totally justified. And I would say to God, you know, don't you talk to me about forgiving these guys, or don't you talk to me about letting them off easily. These guys need to be hunted down and to be brought to justice. You fix my son first, and then we'll engage in conversation. But until you fix my son, no go. I'm entitled. And over the period of years, I've learned I'm entitled to nothing. And I've learned that forgiveness is a very hard subject. It's very, in a sense, it's very, it's almost nebulous. What is forgiveness? But when you and I were talking on the phone the other day, you very accurately reminded me of the story of Joseph. Joseph could have continued in bitterness and anger and rage, rejecting his brothers all of his life. But there was this weeping, and there was this embracing, and there was a recognition. Yes, this awful thing has happened, but God's purpose was greater. There was a purpose and there was a plan in this. And I've had to come to that place where I remember and I recall, and it's been my plumb line, to be honest, of sanity over hard years, that morning, as I was praying, I just felt inside me, pray Psalms 91 and 121, his life will be preserved. And I'm thinking, okay, is this the good side of the coin, or is this the bad side of the coin? You know, we're Jewish, we have two sides and a third side. And as I'm trying to figure out, is God really talking to me? My parents, who were alive in those days, they called me, and they just said, we've just been praying Shacharit, and then we prayed for you and for the kids. And we feel to tell you, pray Psalms 91 and 121 over his life will be preserved. The exact same words. So I have to say, there was a situation that, from my perspective, the weakness of the human eye, looked absolutely disastrous. But I knew from that moment that the sovereign creator and master of the universe is truly that this has not slipped off his radar. He has a plan and a purpose and a destiny for my son in this. And this is where my emotions have to come in line. And by choosing to hate these guys, to hold bitterness, to encourage rage, the only person that's getting damaged is myself. And my toxicity is poisoning my son and disenabling him to heal. So there really was a moment of all I have ever called it and all I will ever call it. It was like a Peniel experience for me, where there was just that intimacy. I really don't dare to talk about it, because it was so personal, but it was as if I was having a moment literally with God, and he was just talking me through it. And it suddenly, from being so nebulous and so out there and so impossible to attain, was, yes, I realize I can't do this, but I'm asking you to work this in me, to help me through this process.
Incredible.
And I it was something that I was shocked to feel a physical release from, but it was a physical release from. And an emotional healing happened in that second.
Absolutely incredible. On the other side of the break, I want you to talk to our listeners about what happened in the courtroom in Israel that day, a remarkable story and one that reduced me to tears. Friends, thank you for joining us on this Friday edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this great Friday. And this is Scott Vohl coming to you live from Dr. Brown's studio in Charlotte, North Carolina. Just be remembering, please remember to pray for Dr. Brown as he's making his way from Amsterdam to Italy today. He's got a grueling schedule up ahead of him, and he always tries, no matter where in the world he is, to be live on these shows with us. He couldn't do it today, and I'm really honored and blessed to be here. If you're just joining us, we have a very, very special guest coming to you live from Jerusalem, Israel, and her name is Lisa Miara. Lisa went through an incredible story where her son back in 1998 was abducted, and total terroristic attack on him as he was serving in the Israeli army. He came up to a junction and the car got pelted with stones. The driver ended up leaving the car and he was left. And amazingly, this video was captured, made it around the world, really international news. And today Lisa is telling us about this story. We were just talking about the issue of bitterness. And Lisa, I'm wondering if you can pick up the story with what you shared with me. If it's not too personal, and if you're able to do it, would you feel comfortable sharing with our listeners what happened when you came face to face with one of the Palestinian men that was involved in abducting your son?
Yes, I can do that. I just want to backtrack for 1 second, Scott. You know, the book of Psalms, the book of Tehillim is very, very clear. Who can ascend the hill of the Lord? He who has clean hands and a pure heart. And if we are holding on to this hate, revenge, bitterness, lack of forgiveness, we do not have access to come up to the hill of the Lord with these clean hands. So it's an act of putting ourselves in a right spiritual place with our Creator and Sovereign God. That's number one. Now, because He had literally given me His ability, I believe, to do this, when I found myself for many years in courtrooms, from military courtrooms up to the Supreme Court, bringing terrorists to justice, and I have to emphasize that, releasing forgiveness does not, what is the word in English? It does not stop the process and the correct process of bringing to justice, holding to accountability. And I fight legally with all that I have for restorative justice for victims of acts of terrorism and other acts against humanity in the world. So I find myself in the courtroom with this arch terrorist sitting opposite me. And various things happen. I mean, I'd expected to see a giant of a man, and I saw this tiny little man, and I understood then the power of Islam that is working in, through, and behind this man. And something was diffused in me in that second, that I saw that he was captive to an entity way bigger, and I saw the flesh and blood man there that had really been taken over, and my heart honestly was moved for him. Now, the other thing that happened for a few seconds, I suppose I forgot that I was in a courtroom, because suddenly in front of my eyes, there's scales of justice. And I see my son on one side, and I see this other guy, Yosef Abu Soukri, on the other side. And I sort of sense God asking me a question, which I was not at all pleased to hear. Lisa, tell me what you see. And I sat in silence, but I'm not going to answer this.
Okay. Lisa, on the other side of the break, we've got to get back to this story. The Lord asking you what you see as you see your son and the man who tried to kill him. Friends, listen on the other side of the break. Thanks for joining us today on Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, friends, thanks so much for joining us today on Line of Fire. This is Scott Vohl coming to you from Michael Brown's seat in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we are listening to the riveting and compelling story of Lisa Miara, a Jewish woman from Jerusalem who moved from the safety of Britain, moved to Jerusalem feeling the call of God to her homeland, waves goodbye to her son as he goes into the army and gets the harrowing phone call one day that he was abducted at a junction in Israel, and his life was threatened, and he could have been beaten to death. And we were just, Lisa, at a crucial point in this story where we were talking about bitterness and forgiveness, and here you are, you're sitting in a courtroom, and you are face to face with the young man who tried to take your son's life. Can you just pick up the story from that point and tell us what it was that you felt like the Lord was speaking to you?
So the scales of justice came down. My son is on one side, the terrorist on the other side, and the scales of justice are balanced, and I'm not happy. And I begin to argue with God because I really feel he's questioning me there in the courtroom as if I was on the defense table and telling Melissa, what do you see? And I said, well, I don't think this is at all fair. They shouldn't be balanced. We're the Jews. This is our land. They have to be tipped in our favor. And one of those, well, I have no words, almost like a holy moment in one's life when that something just pierces your entire being and changes your life forever. Because I know, and I will always know until the day I die, that God spoke to me in an audible voice, me, a little human being, and saying, I love both equally. It is not about Israel being my chosen people. And then what happened was, I knew there was this questioning of me, as if I'm the one on trial, would you go to both people and say those words that Moses said over both people, the Muslims and my people, the Jews, let my people go. And in a moment again of incredible, probably naivety, I said yes. And for the last 14 years, I've been working with terror survivors of attacks inside Israel in the last 3 years on a more global basis, and now of the last couple of months working with Muslims in areas in the Middle East. So a long way from seeing those scales of justice and today realizing, yes, those scales of justice are truly balanced.
Absolutely. Absolutely remarkable. This is not something I don't believe that we in our own lives have in ourselves. I mean, look, if someone hurts one of my kids, I can say, I forgive you. But as soon as I hear again about this person or these people, it's really easy for bitterness or unforgiveness to again creep up, only for us to realize, no, I really didn't forgive. Because when the Lord forgives, and the scriptures talk about, I will remember your sin no more. That is supernatural, Lisa, and it just blesses me beyond measure that in the confines of a courtroom, it's not even like you were in a synagogue or a church or a congregation. You weren't watching some rabbi or pastor on TV. You were in a normal room, and the Lord lifts the scales from your eyes, and he shows you two people that he loves. And you said something interesting, and I'd like to just maybe talk about this for a minute, and then I want to talk about Springs of Hope. But you said something to the effect that it's not about my chosen people. I think sometimes, at least in America, whether Christian or Jew, sometimes it's easy to wave an Israeli flag and to say, Israel can do no wrong. I believe in God. Therefore, I wholeheartedly support Israel. Let me ask you something. As somebody who lives in Israel, how do you deal with the perceived injustices that are coming out? Are they true? Are there Palestinians that are being being abused by Israel? And what ought our positions to be in situations like that? Maybe you can speak into that for a minute or two.
Yes. I have just spent the last week at a conference here in Jerusalem on the freedom of the press, where if I had, as I did listen to the Palestinian presenters, Israel is doing gross injustices. Now, one can debate that yes or no on both sides of the fence, you know, until tomorrow. The bottom line for me is that the Tanakh says that Israel is the apple of his eye. If you unpack that word from the Hebrew, the apple of his eye, it means that black bit, is it called the iris in English, through which he looks out? And the iris in Hebrew is called the Ishon. The Ishon means the little man. So what the word of God is saying here, Israel is the little man of his eye.
Mm.
So God looks at the entire world, the destinies of communities, nations, and people through this little man. This little man, his plan was that this little man be a chosen people, walk in covenant according to the Torah, the five books of Moses. Israel is not doing that. Until Israel does that, Israel will not be a light to the world, and Israel will make mistakes on every level, social, welfare, humanitarian, governmental. But that does not change the fact that Israel is always the little man of his eye. Mm. So yes, there are injustices, absolutely, and there always will be, but Israel's the little man of his eye.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up that scripture from Zechariah 2, because during the break, I actually opened to that scripture. And let me read it to our listeners here. For thus says the Lord of hosts, after glory he has sent me against the nations which plunder you. For he who touches you touches the apple of his eye. And just... I just want to encourage all of you who are listening today. Here's a mother whose son was beat nearly to death, and the pain that this mother went through is incomparable, because she's only human, to the pain that God the Father goes through when he sees people touching Israel. Now, does this mean that God loves Israel more than any other nation, or that God loves Jews more than Arabs? Absolutely not. The word says God so loved the world that he sent his son. But there is a divine call on the nation of Israel and the land of Israel that is undeniable throughout the scriptures. And I just want to encourage all of you who are listening, we need to stand for Israel. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we wave political flags and say Israel can do no wrong. But what it does mean is we grab hold of the scriptures and we believe God. We do what the psalm says. We pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Some of you may be believers, you may not be believers in Yeshua. I personally believe that ultimate peace is not going to come until Yeshua returns to Israel. But regardless of what you believe, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. It's in the Psalms, and it's something that I believe every God-loving person is called and required to do. We've got a couple of minutes before our last break. So, Lisa, would you just start off by talking about Springs of Hope and what it is? I may interrupt you in a minute or so because of the break. And then on the other side of the break, if anybody wants to call in and has a question for Lisa, you can dial into the show 1-866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Lisa, why don't you just briefly introduce what Springs of Hope is, and then on the other side of the break, we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Certainly. Thank you, Scott. So Springs of Hope Israel is a Israeli-registered non-profit organization working for the long haul alongside victims of terror. As I said, in the past years, it has been very much restricted to work within the borders of Israel, and it is gradually becoming global with a focus on the Middle East.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to hear more about that. And friends, if you would like to support Lisa and what she's doing over there with victims of terror. You can go to my Facebook page, Scott Volk. You can go to my Facebook page, Together for Israel, or you can go to our website, togetherforisrael.org. Click on the Partner With Us button, and 100% of everything that comes in today, we are going to be sending over to Lisa for her amazing work with victims of terror. And as you hear Lisa speak, you can really tell that this woman is a woman who loves not only the Jewish people, but the Arab people also. On the other side of the break, we'll hear more about Springs of Hope, and we'll take your phone calls. 1-866-34-TRUTH. Join us on the other side of the break.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That's our good friend Paul Wilbur. And we thought about playing that little clip earlier, but I feel like we're at that point in the interview where we can really talk about shouts of joy, because here we are speaking to a woman whose son was nearly beaten to death by Israel's enemies, and she was able to take that situation and turn it into something where God gets glory. On the other side of the break, before our break, Lisa was starting to tell us about the organization, the nonprofit organization that she has started. Lisa, why don't you just pick up, give us the name of the organization and the basic premise behind why you founded Springs of Hope.
Mm-hmm. I founded Springs of Hope Israel, which you can find at www.springsofhopeisrael.com, by absolute default, Scott. I was in business, import and export, could tell you anything about opening trading routes between Israel and the Far East, knew nothing about terror, nothing about post-trauma, nothing about Islam, and that became my life's work and focus. And why did I found it? Simply because after the attack on Asaf, and he was then in another terror attack, and my second son was involved in a terror attack, and we continued to bury kids and friends just living around us on a daily basis. But after this lynching in Ramallah, many, many local Israelis just began to phone me. My name is an unusual name. They could find it in a second in the phone book. We were in the media the whole time and saying, what do you do about legal representation? What do you do about finance for operations? What do you do about rehab? What do you do about post-trauma? And I was at the place where guys give me a break. I'm in a big black hole, and I don't know what to do. But I had to start to research. And from that, in fact, it was the day after my son was in a second terror attack in the center of Jerusalem.
The same son, Lisa?
The same son, and we put from sunrise to sunset the bodies of 10 close friends of his into the earth, that standing over one of the graves, something just finally broke in me, and I knew that I could no longer just bury, just sit, go to visit in the Shiva, go to the Shloshim, the Memorial Day. I knew that I, although I felt totally unequipped, totally out of my depth, still couldn't help my son and still can't help my son, but I knew that I had to give a response, that I could not cross the street and walk away and just say polite words. I had to do something. It was required of me. And from that place of being required from me, Springs of Hope came. And it's just been working it out ever since, Scott, you know, and things are organic. I mean, in those years of 2002, 3, 4, it was emergency aid. It was helping families when they were in hospitals, helping kids who are having 50 operations. I've got some kids, incredible kids who've had 50 operations but no schooling, so we provided schooling. Then there was a period where there were widows who were incredible homemakers, could cook food for 30 people at the drop of a hat, but had no idea how to bank, had no idea how to shop, had to set up businesses. So it's gone through all these changes over the years, And in the last 2 years, I've been doing a lot of forums and participations in forums under the auspices of the European Union. And this year, because I felt that my vision's becoming more global, and I've realized something that Israelis and Jews really don't want to realize, but I've realized you've got 74% of the victims of acts of terrorism on a global basis are Muslims. And so for the first time in Israel, we created, a conference in March for global victims of terrorism, Arabs, Jews, and Christians together. And with the help of God, that's what I'll be doing next year, March next year. So it's come a long, long way. And then, as I told you when we were chatting earlier, the doors have now opened up for me to go into some of the countries around Israel to work with victims of atrocities and crimes against humanity. And that, for me, is, I look back and I say, oh, God, I just can't believe you. From this life-changing, devastating experience, A, you are healing my son. I watch it slowly, 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 slowly. But I see this journey that you're taking, and I sit down and I look at you and I say, you're absolutely amazing. You're mind-blowing. Where will we be this time next year? In a week's time, I've no idea. I'm still walking out something that I have no ability in my human nature to walk out. It's a dependence on that cloud by day and that pillar of fire by night. It's a total dependence on that.
Mm. Absolutely incredible. So for people who would like to find out more about what Lisa Miara is doing in the area of reaching out to victims of terror, you can go to her website, which is springsofhopeisrael.com. And as I said earlier today, anyone who would like to help support Lisa, you can go to either of my Facebook pages, Scott Volk or Together for Israel. And there's a link on there as to what you can click, or you can go directly onto our togetherforisrael.org website. Every penny that comes in today will go towards Lisa and the work that she's doing. Lisa, we just have 1 or 2 minutes left. If there was anything that a Jewish woman from Jerusalem would like for the church in America to know, can you just please share your heart with us in this final minute or so?
Yes, I live in the center of the city, in the middle of the market, and I walk through there 10 times a day, and I see the faces of those that shop and the stall holders, and they tell me everything. It's the pulse of the city. Israel needs friends more than ever. We know what is going on in the nations surrounding us. We're feeling the closeness of war again. We need those friends. A while back, I was up in the north by Kfar Blum, and there's an incredible memorial to the 73 soldiers that died when a helicopter crashed when it was leaving Lebanon. And there's an inscription from the book of Job, I think it is, and it talks about a friend who is so close that there is nowhere between. We need these kinds of Christian friends, that there is no air between the Christian church and Israel.
Wonderful, wonderful. Lisa, I just want to take just a second to thank you so much for your time. I know it's late in Israel. It's Shabbat evening there. And even as you are celebrating Shabbat, it's my prayer that the peace, the shalom of God would be in the Miara household through both of your sons, all that you are doing with Springs of Hope. And it's my prayer that the Lord will take what the enemy meant for evil and turn it to good. I bless you, and I thank you so much for joining with us. Shabbat shalom to you.
And thank you.
Amen. Thank you, Lisa. God bless
you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I want to welcome to the Line of Fire microphones my thoroughly Jewish host, Scott Volk.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome to a special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, coming to you on Friday, as Dr. Brown is en route from Amsterdam to Italy. I am blessed to be able to host the show for him today. If you weren't with us in the first hour, I encourage you to get the archive copy off the internet, where we had an amazing time with Lisa Miara, the mother of a young man who was abducted, nearly beaten to death, a woman who the Lord spoke to in the area of forgiveness and bitterness, a woman who started an organization called Springs of Hope for victims of terror in Israel. It was a riveting hour and such an incredible blessing to be able to interview her. In this hour, we've got some great guests as well, not the least of which is my first guest this hour, Samuel Whitfield, who will be coming to us live from Kansas City, Missouri. Samuel is a dear friend of mine and someone who's got an event coming up that I wanted him to share with you about. Samuel, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you, Scott.
Thank you so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, my pleasure to be with you today.
Awesome. Samuel and I had the privilege of being in Israel together earlier this year. And Samuel, the Lord's put an interesting assignment on you with regard to Israel and an upcoming gathering that's there. Can you tell our listeners what that assignment is?
Sure, absolutely, Scott. You know, the last year or so, the Lord's just convicted my own heart, and then even several others working with us as a team, about the question of Israel and the next generation and young adults, and how we approach the question of Israel and even the larger question of the Middle East. You know, as you and I know, it's become front page news. It's on all the TV and the newspapers and everything else. And the reality is most believers in the West are confused, or some are ambivalent, or many just hold to opinions that are based on social media. So it's in our heart to say, you know, the best thing possible is to take young adults and other believers and give them a context to gather actually in the land of Israel, experience what's happening in the land, and also get a chance to encounter the believers in the land. There's so many stories, as you well know, Scott, you know, from some of your tours, there's so many stories of what God's doing that believers in the West don't get to hear. So we want to get a chance for believers to encounter those stories of what God's doing and wrestle with some of the questions that are in front of us in terms of how we approach Israel, how we wrestle with the rise of global Islam and issues like that.
Wonderful, wonderful. As you and I have spoken many times, it seems to me that especially in the young evangelical community, the hearts of these young folks are turning more now, it seems, towards the Palestinians. And you know, I am not anti anything, nor do I think that God is anti or pro anything. Obviously, God is pro Israel. He's pro Palestinian. He's pro world. He sent his son to the world as salvation. But if there's one reason today why you would say young evangelical Christians are not supporting Israel the way their parents and grandparents did, can you take 30 or 45 seconds before our music comes up for the break to give what your perception of that reason might be?
Yeah, I think there's a couple reasons. I think, to say it really quickly, that there's a desire to support the underdog, or, you know, young adults tend to have a desire to support social justice or right what they perceive to be wrong. And based on certain media portrayals, they see a context where the Palestinians seem to be the underdog and they want to fight for him.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll just take a couple of minutes, if you can stick with us through the break, Samuel. We'll talk about the upcoming conference. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire.
What did you...
Fire we please, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, welcome to this special edition, this Friday edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Scott Volk coming to you live from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I've got Samuel Whitfield on the line talking about an event that he is overseeing in Israel next summer. Samuel, it's interesting. I'm looking at this this clip from Memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute. And a direct quote from a Middle Eastern sheikh says, the Muslim has two enemies. The first is Satan. The second enemy is the Zionist Jew. So there's a little bit of a battle raging both in the natural and in the heavenlies over Jerusalem. Tell me really quickly what you hope to see happen as a result of this conference that you are overseeing in Israel this summer.
You know, Scott, the preeminent goal we'd like to see is sometimes we only discuss the political issues in the region, and those are certainly significant. But as believers, we want to look at the region first through the lens of the gospel. And that, as you mentioned, there's this question of, do I have to pick the calling of the Jewish people or the calling of the Palestinian? But actually, in the gospel, we don't have to pick. That Jesus has a unique calling for the Jewish people, but he also intends to bring salvation and blessing to the Palestinian as well. So we'd like to see a shift to where I can call it the missional approach, or the vision for partnering with believers for the sake of the gospel among both the Jew and the Palestinian becomes the primary way we look at Israel and even the whole region.
Absolutely wonderful. So there's going to be a 2 or 3 day conference as well as a tour. For people who are interested in connecting with that tour, which, by the way, I will be on as well as the conference, how can people get in touch with you, Samuel?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch is just go to the website. The website is One King. It's O-N-E, king2015.com. Right there, you can. There's a contact link. You can push that and be happy to answer any questions about the event itself or, like you said, the tour that's also going to be after it.
Yeah, friends, if you believe in the God of Israel and you're listening to this show, this is an event that I would highly encourage you to join us on. As a matter of fact, Dr. Brown will be the keynote speaker on the first night of that event, and I will be there as well along with Samuel. It's going to be a great lineup of folks. Samuel, thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to being together with you and some of our listeners in Israel this summer.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. God bless you, friend. All righty. So if you have a question or you would like to call into the show today, my next guest is a riveting one, Joel Richardson, who is not only an expert on the Middle East and Islam, but he's also a New York Times best-selling author. And I'm honored to call him friend. Our phone lines will be open while Joel is on. 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Joel Richardson, are you on the line with us?
I am here, Scotty.
Beam me up, Scotty. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. It's a great privilege that I have to sit in Dr. Brown's seat right here, and it's a great privilege to have you on the line with me. For those who may not know who Joel Richardson is, can you just take a minute and tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you're employed in doing?
Yeah, no, it's my honor to be on with you today. As you mentioned, I've authored a few books which have made a bit of an impact in the world of eschatology and Islam and Israel. And actually the ministry that I'm actually just in the process of forming is called Father to Ishmael Ministries. And so overall my focus is on the Middle East, both to the Jew and to the Muslim. I'd say my primary calling is to the Muslim. And I was just blessed to be able to listen in with Samuel before coming on and just so resonate with Samuel's heart to see the gospel go forth throughout the Middle East, and that's what I'm That's what I'm primarily about.
You know, it's so incredible to hear that as somebody who is a full-blooded Jew, as I am, married to a full-blooded Arab, as my wife is. You know, when I look at my children and I see a little bit of Ishmael and a little bit of Isaac in them, I think to myself, it is definitely possible for God to bring every promise that he has for both Ishmael and Isaac to pass. And when I read your books and when I listen to you speak, you're one of the loudest voices out there, friend, and I just really want to encourage you to keep up the great work. Your new book, When a Jew Rules the World, is a special that Dr. Brown's ministry is running this week. I think this book retails for something like $27. But for anybody who calls in today, we will send it to you, postage paid, $25. To call to order this book, you just need to simply dial 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. And for a gift of $25, dollars postage paid, we will send you Joel's newest book entitled When a Jew Rules the World. And that title alone, my friend, can be quite controversial. Can you tell us how you got the title and what the premise of the book is?
Sure. Well, of course, the premise of the book is that there is, in fact, a Jew who is coming back to rule the world, and his name is Jesus or Yeshua. And, so many Christians throughout the earth, we believe that Jesus is going to return, but often fail to remember the fact that he is and forever will be God incarnate in the body of a Jewish man. He comes back as the Jewish Messiah, as the King of the Jews, to restore the Davidic kingdom, to restore the Jewish kingdom that will actually rule over the nations. And so, of course, whenever you're picking a title, you want to pick one that will get attention. There's so much anti-Semitism and conspiracy theories throughout the earth, and so I thought I would play off of some of those conspiracy theories that, you know, of course, the Jews rule the world, they control Hollywood and Washington, and, the United States is one nation under Israel, and, you know, all those type of conspiracy theories, and sort of just throw it right back in their face and say, you guys are really on the wrong side of the aisle here, that God, the creator of the universe, is, whether we like to admit it or not, very much an ethnicist. And, of course, his reasons for being an ethnicist is because he wants to redeem all of creation, every tongue, tribe, people, and nation. And so he, in his sovereignty, has chosen to carry out that plan of redemption through a man, through a family, and through a nation, and that nation and that people is the Jewish people.
That sounds, it's obviously truth, but to some Christian ears, that might sound totally and completely foreign. What do you mean Jesus is still Jewish? You know, when the revelation hit me that Jesus is coming back as the light. Well, he was born King of the Jews. He died King of the Jews. He lived a thoroughly Jewish life. And he's coming back as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. Sometimes I like to say to people, he's coming back as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. And then I'll just simply say, Jew, duh. But we just don't get it because he's been robbed of his identity in modern Christendom. So this book is just a breath of fresh air. Friends, if you'd like to call in and talk to our guest, Joel Richardson, New York Times bestselling author and internationally known speaker, you can dial 866-348-7884. That's 866-348-7884. And before we get into the contents of the book, Joel, we've got some callers holding on the line. So I just want to take this first call. Bill's calling from Phoenix, Arizona, my former hometown. Bill, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you so much. I have a question that kind of sets the whole stage for the regathering that we know today. I don't have a problem at all with the regathering of the Jews, but I have a problem when it's related to the idea of the regathering of Israel, because Malachi, to me, has to have been fulfilled already, the prophecy that Israel would be without root or branch on this earth, and therefore I have no concept as to when a person that reads that prophecy could come up with, well, if it hasn't happened already, when is it supposed to happen?
Well, that's a great question, Bill. Hang on one second. Let's go to our guest, Joel. How would you respond to Bill talking about the root and the branch of Israel prophecy in Malachi?
Well, I think at a particular, I mean, Israel as a nation has gone through a series of judgments and exiles, and I think we can say that has been fulfilled, but that doesn't preclude Israel from having been regathered.
Okay, hang on one second. We'll get the rest of this on the other side of the break. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, this is not Dr. Brown. I'm not nearly as smart as he is, but I would contend that I'm at least as good looking as he is. And it's a joy to come to you live from Charlotte, North Carolina today, where my very special guest, Joel Richardson, internationally known speaker and author, is with me. And we're talking about when a Jew rules the world, the title of his new book, which I believe is also destined to be a New York Times bestseller. Joel, right before the break, you were responding to Bill's question. Bill is still on hold. Is there anything more that you'd like to say about the fulfillment of prophecy where Jewish people coming to Israel as their homeland is concerned?
Well, I mean, I think in the ultimate sense, the restoration of Israel has to be viewed as an eschatological event that is fulfilled with the return of Jesus. But clearly, it is a requirement that that process begins before his return. And so you have, I mean, numerous prophecies. Of course, a looming prophecy, Ezekiel 38. You have the gathering of the nations against Jerusalem. And God says to Gog, who's the leader of this invasion, he says, this thought will come into your mind, but you will come against the land where the people have been regathered to the mountains of Israel. And I don't think anyone would argue that the restoration is complete, but to argue that Israel is not being restored is actually a fairly racist claim, because if it's not Israel that's being restored, then who is that, you know, presently being restored to the land of Israel?
Yeah. Great response. Bill, did you have any kind of follow-up question, or do you feel like it was handled?
I think I could try to do my best to answer that last question he raised, and that is there was a blessing that was given by Isaac to Esau, and it was a blessing that really leads to a regathering of the Edomites and those from Esau back into the land of milk and honey and dew of heaven, and it seems to fit more likely that prophecy, God is honoring it and fulfilling it as to not Israelites, but rather the other son, the older son.
Thanks so much, Bill. Joel, how would you respond to that, my friend?
So, in essence, he's saying that the Jews today, the people that call themselves Jews, are actually the descendants of Esau. I mean, if I'm understanding him correctly, then as I said, the only way that he could hold his position would be to hold a fairly racist, unbiblical position. And I hope I'm not misrepresenting him in saying that.
Yeah, Bill, you're no longer on the line with us, but if you'd like to email for further clarification, please feel free to do that. We'd love to be in contact with you. Joel, before we go deeper into the book, if people want to get in touch with you and your ministry, how can people do that?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. I'm at joelstrumpet.com, and that's sort of my online ministry home, and you can find all my information, updates, speaking schedule, those sort of things at joelstrumpet.com.
Wonderful. And friends, if you're interested in ordering Joel's book, you can probably do it from him directly, or if you'd like to take advantage of Dr. Brown's special today only, You can order this book for $25, postage paid, beautiful hardcover book. To order that book, dial 1-800-278-9978, and we'll get that off to you today. Joel, as I read the book, and really privileged to be one of the folks that endorsed the book, it was like a breath of fresh air for me, because what you did is you took issues that were very, very complex and potentially for the theological elite, and you boiled it down so that somebody like Scott Volk, not Dr. Scott Volk, but Scott Volk, can understand. I think you did a masterful job of that. And one of the sections that I found to be really very, very helpful and enlightening is your section on the covenants. We've got a couple of minutes before our next break. Maybe you can start us off by just introducing what covenant means to God. And then maybe on the other side of our break, we'll talk exactly about each of the covenants that you talked about in your book. But if somebody was going to say, Joel, what does it mean that God is a covenant keeping God? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, it's very simple. You just say God is a promise keeper. A covenant is really it's more than just a promise. It's actually a vow unto death. And God himself has made vows unto death with humans in the past. And, you know, that's a promise. When God makes any promise, he keeps it. But when he makes a promise as solemnly as he has done, for instance, with Abraham, then we can be assured that he will fulfill and keep those promises.
That sounds absolutely right to me. However, we have people out in the world today and behind some pulpits. And Matt, maybe we can even start the next section with the audio clip that I showed you earlier, as you'll hear, that can seemingly refute that with their mind. What do you think, Joel, is the greatest question mark that people will put on the issue of God's covenant keeping power where Israel is concerned? I know what we call them. We'll call them supersessionists or replacement theologians. But what is the backbone to their argument that God's covenant with Israel is no longer valid today?
Well, it's theological racism, plain and simple. It's approaching the Bible from a particular worldview, which is most often a very Gentile-centered worldview, which begins with a very limited understanding of the New Testament, and then tries to reinterpret the Old Testament, the very foundation for the New Testament, in light of their distorted understanding of the New. And Paul the Apostle simply refers to it as arrogance. And I don't think we should shy away from using language as strong. It really is a matter of not knowing where you fit in the story, trying to make yourself the lead character, as opposed to simply being happy that you're simply in the story and thankful for the grace that's been given to you. There's this demand to be numero uno and to take those that God called first and to try to push them aside.
Yeah, that arrogance, which Paul does talk about, really is the root of a pride issue. I'm reminded of that scripture in the book of James where it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And one area that I believe, unfortunately, the church is showing its pride in this hour is where the issue of Israel is concerned. God opposes the proud. And I think when we're ignorant of God's purposes for Israel, we become arrogant where Israel is concerned, and then we say that it is we who now are the recipients of the promises of God. Friends, this is amazing stuff with Joel Richardson. We're going to dig into covenants on the other side of the break. If you'd like to call in and ask your questions, Joel and I will be taking your questions at 1-866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. We're going to see you on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us, friends. This is Scott Volk coming to you live from Charlotte, North Carolina. Privileged to sit in Dr. Brown's chair for the day as he is traveling from Amsterdam to Italy, where he's got an amazingly crazy schedule of ministry this week. It's just a blessing to have Joel Richardson, author of When a Jew Rules the World, on with us. Joel, I want to interact with you a little bit about a particular pastor's comments. I'm not even going to dignify this man by giving his name over the air. But just listen to this clip as we play it, Joey. I think it's clip number 10. Let's just listen.
So basically, one who does not believe that Jesus is the Messiah, according to the Bible, is Antichrist. And the Bible teaches here that, if you don't have the Son, you don't have the Father. And so what I want to preach about this morning is the subject of the Jews and their lies. That's the title of the sermon this morning. The Jews and their lies. Because that's what the Bible says. Anyone who does not believe that Jesus is the Messiah is a liar.
Oh, my goodness. The Jews and their lies. Joel, what do you make of this? And this guy is standing behind a pulpit in America today preaching this stuff.
Yeah, this particular pastor, I should just say, is a bit of a clown and an attention seeker. It's amazing his historical ignorance in that he's preaching a message and based on the title of a book by Martin Luther, which is really one of the most vile diatribes written by a leading Christian theologian, historical figure, against the Jewish people, filled with incitement to violence and genocide, and in many ways, Luther's work became part of the theological or ideological foundation for what Hitler carried out a few hundred years later. And, listen, truth, let me just say this, lies, Satan's lies are most often candy-coated to a degree. He always candy-coats his poison. If it was just pure poison, no one in the world would accept it. And so we need to be honest that if someone is in unbelief and they're denying that Jesus is the Messiah, there is a spirit of Antichrist there. Nevertheless, for a Gentile to begin with that idea and stretch it to such perverse places as individuals such as this pastor does, it truly is the embodiment of that arrogance that we spoke of earlier. And I would even go so far as to say that when someone puts themselves in that position, when they are offending the very apple of God's eye, and repeatedly throughout the scriptures, God himself identifies with unbelieving Israel.
That's right.
Unbelieving Israel. He actually identifies with them. They are putting their own salvation at risk. And I would be trembling if I was that individual.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking today with Joel Richardson, author of When a Jew Rules the World. We're taking your phone calls at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Travis, we're going to pick you up on the other side of the break. And we're also going to be talking to Joel about the covenants in Scripture. What do they mean for us today? What is the covenant? Did the New Covenant supersede the Abrahamic Covenant? What is the Abrahamic Covenant? Is it still in effect today? Friends, you don't want to miss this riveting hour with Joel Richardson. And if you're interested in ordering his book, go to Joel's website, which is what, Joel, again?
Joelstrumpet.com.
Joelstrumpet.com, or you can call Dr. Brown's ministry and order the book for $25 postage paid at 1-800-278-9978. Join us on the other side of the break. More with Joel Richardson then.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, this is Scott Volk coming to you live from the offices of Dr. Michael Brown and his studio for Line of Fire Radio. Privileged to be online with Joel Richardson, best-selling author, filmmaker, globally known intergalactic genius. How's that, Joel, for a great introduction for you?
That's good. That's good. We started out with some Beastie Boys in the background.
Well, listen, man, your book, When a Jew Rules the World, has had a tremendous impact on me. I want to talk about covenants in a minute. If you don't mind, we're just going to go to the phone lines. We've had some folks holding for quite some time. Travis from High Point, North Carolina, thanks so much for listening and joining us on The Line of Fire.
No problem. Good show.
Thanks, bro. Hey, got a question for our guest today?
Yeah, real quick for the question, this is the greatest show, Michael Brown's show. You're in big shoes to fill, and you cannot call people racist, and saying you're racist is never an answer on the show. Michael Brown would not do that. He's someone who believes that you'd have to come to Jesus.
Well, Travis, saved. I'm not sure I called anybody a racist, but do you have a question for our guest, Joel?
Yeah. Does he consider me a son of Abraham? I'm not a Jew, but I'm saved through faith.
Joel, how would you respond to Travis?
I'm having a hard time hearing him. Did he say, would he consider me a child of Abraham?
No, he said...
a Christian. I'm sorry. A Christian is a Christian through faith in Jesus. That is not a Jew. Are they a son of Abraham?
Well, scripturally speaking, if you are by faith, then you are spiritually of the seed of Abraham. But
now,
physically,
if a Jew is not saved through faith in Jesus, are they not broke off? The branch broke off from the tree.
Absolutely. This is Paul's point. He says, if someone is in unbelief, they're broken off by a lack of belief. And then he warns, he says, if you look down on them, then you're in danger of being broken off yourself.
Nobody is doing that.
Okay, but...
they have to come through faith through Jesus to be the seed of Abraham.
Nobody would argue with that.
Okay, I feel like people that are very light on this radio station are being called racist.
Travis, can you say that again? You're breaking up just a little bit, Travis. Maybe you can turn your radio or computer down and just repeat that question really quickly before we move on to the next caller.
I'm good. I'm sorry if you can't understand me. I feel like people that are very nice and polite and just are asking questions are being called racist, and that's mainly why I call. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Travis, thanks so much for calling. Obviously, we don't think that people are necessarily racists, but when you speak a certain way against a certain people group, whether you're nice or not, then let a racist be a racist. We all on this show, Dr. Brown, I, my guest Joel Richardson, we have a love for people, whether they are Jewish or Muslim or Chinese. God so loved the world that he gave his son. He didn't send his son just so that a certain race of people could be saved. However, he did choose a race of people through whom Messiah would come and salvation would come. And unless we're willing to embrace that, I'm not sure that we fully understand and know God's heart for Israel and the rest of the world. Dave holding online from Wilmington, North Carolina. Thanks so much for listening to Line of Fire. Dave, are you with us? All right, Dave, thanks so much. Sorry we didn't reach you, and we somehow lost you. But Joel, it's a real joy as I'm reading the book. It's not only totally and completely educational, but I think that this book is relevant for somebody who has a PhD in theology and somebody who is fairly simple-minded, because the way in which you write is so endearing and enlightening. And one of the chapters that I'd really like to talk about in the midst of taking calls is the chapter that you wrote on the covenants. the Abrahamic covenant, the Mosaic and Davidic covenant, and the New Covenant. Can you break it down a little bit and give us maybe an overview of what each of those covenants are and what they mean in the 5 minutes before our next break?
Sure. Well, let me just begin by saying that for most Christians, they simply come to the Bible, they read the New Testament, they hear about this new covenant that was made in the blood of Christ, and they believe in Jesus, and it's through this that they come into the faith. And for the most part, that's all they know. There tends to be, and I'm not making a blanket statement, but there tends to be a significant amount of ignorance or illiteracy with regard to the Old Testament and the various covenants that you mentioned, the Abrahamic, the Mosaic, the Davidic, and how they interrelate with the New Covenant. And in simple terms, I would just say this, is that the God of heaven and creation has a plan to redeem all of creation, to redeem every tongue, tribe, people, and nation. And you'll often hear those that are, you know, replacement theologians, supersessionists, they'll say, well, God today is not interested in real estate. And, you know, they'll say, like, you know, you guys that are, you know, you Scott and Joel, you're trying to limit God. You're taking this God that has expanded his promises and his vision, and you're trying to restrict it to this limited little piece of land. And the answer to that is that God's plan of universal redemption for, you know, again, people from every tongue, tribe, people, and nation, for all of creation, there is a particular platform. There is a launching pad, a foundation from which he will carry out that grand plan. And that foundation is the promised land, the land that he promised to Abraham. So with the Abrahamic covenant, you have this promise where God swore on his own life that he would give Abraham and his descendants this piece of land. And later with the Mosaic covenant, he gives them the laws whereby they were to be obedient to either remain in the land or to be spit out. And then later with the Davidic covenant, he promised that he would give them a king who would rule over them forever. And then it's in the New Covenant that he promised to put his heart, his spirit into them, whereby they could live fully obedient in the land. And so we have to recognize the symbiotic relationship, the connectedness of all of these covenants, and realize that the New Covenant doesn't mean anything without the foundation of the Abrahamic and the Davidic, and these things all flow together. And it's out of this restored people of Israel back to the land that becomes, as I said, the launching pad and the foundation from which he carries out his grand plan of redemption for all of creation and for all people.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a word that sometimes gets associated with covenant, and that word is unconditional. If I give you my word that I'm going to do something, regardless of how you respond, I'm going to keep my word because I am a word keeper. Is every covenant that God makes unconditional?
Yeah, and this is the critical point, is that, no, with the Abrahamic covenant, it's most certainly unconditional, and it was also unilateral. God made the promise to Abraham while he was in a deep sleep. He was snoozing when God made the promise, and he said he's going to carry it out regardless. Now, this is different with regard to the Mosaic. The Mosaic covenant was very much this legal agreement between two parties, between the God of Israel and the people of Israel, and it was characterized by many, if you, then I. If you do this, then I will do this. If you don't do this, then I will do this.
Mm.
And that's very different from the Abrahamic, and then likewise with the Davidic. He promised that he's going to put a king on the throne over Israel, and that was an unconditional covenant. And likewise with the New Covenant, it was also unconditional in that he promised that he would pour out his spirit, he would put his spirit into his people. And now I would say the New Covenant is conditional by faith in terms of individuals, but in terms of his corporate promise to that people called Israel, that is unconditional. He said he is going to save his people, and he will fulfill that in a remnant of Jews at the end of the age. And in the ultimate sense, those that are alive at the time that he returns, he will put his spirit in them. And there will be a, really, Israel is the only people that has this very specific sovereign call, this ongoing election over them as a people. You know, throughout the rest of the nations, it's whosoever, it's all, it's any who would say yes, who would put their faith in Christ. But even in their unbelief, there remains, and this is the mystery of Jewish election, there remains this ongoing calling and election because God promised to put his spirit on them and in them.
Good stuff, bro. The book is When a Jew Rules the World. We'll be back with more from Joel Richardson on the other side of the break. Dave, hang on tight. We'll get your call on the other side of the break as well.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on this special edition of Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, coming to you on Friday. The book is When a Jew Rules the World. My guest, Joel Richardson, best-selling New York Times best-selling author of the book The Islamic Antichrist, is the author of this book and our special guest today. And it's so awesome having you on with us, Joel. If you'd like to get this book, Dr. Brown's running a special today, $25 postage paid for this beautiful hardcover copy of Joel's book. All you need to do is dial 1-800-278-9978, and you can place the order. We'll get that out in the mail to you today. Dave, you've been hanging on for quite some time. Thanks for your patience. We tried you once before but lost you. Can you hear us now?
Yes, I can.
Awesome, Dave. What's your question for Joel?
Well, I wanted to understand, you had a caller that mentioned when you played a tape about someone talking about Antichrist, obviously those that don't believe that Jesus is a Messiah are Antichrist, and that is very true. What in the speech that the pastor, I don't know who he was, or that was all I heard it said. What is the problem about that? That is obviously a true statement. Jew or Gentile, it doesn't matter. You're an Antichrist if you don't believe Jesus is a Messiah.
Joel, how would you respond to that? Dave, hang on with us. Joel, how would you respond to that?
I think probably to answer your question, you'd have to listen to the rest of the sermon as well as a lot of the other things that this particular pastor says in the spirit in which it's said, sort of the arrogant, condescending, bomb-throwing spirit. You know when someone is making inflammatory statements to try to get attention. And specifically, if you're quoting, I mean, to quote the Jews in their lives would be similar to say, my sermon today is called Mein Kampf.
Right.
And it's about the Jews. You know, it would be that distasteful.
One other question I have, and I'm very familiar with the Jewish covenants and have been a Christian 40 years and, you know, probably no less now than I knew when I got saved. However, I have questions. Many questions that are unanswered biblically, I think. And, you know, one in particular I would say is, you know, I believe in the Abrahamic covenant, but, you know, you have the Heineckenographs and folks that from an exegetical eschatology point of view make some very good cases. Was that really fulfilled? Was it strictly for the Old Testament and the Jews did get their land back? Is it? Can you carry it forward into the New Testament? And I think some of the disparity or some of the problems we have between, this sounds as a racist, and I don't want to sound like that because I love the Jewish people to death, but a Christian that is strong in with the Jewish background or a Christian that is just a, you know, not a respecter of person, doesn't care about Jew or Gentile, just loves the Lord with all his heart, mind, soul, and body, and his neighbors himself. And that person looks at and reads, especially tapes and things that come out today, showing that, you know, when the Jews came in 48, they murdered, raped people. And when I say that, obviously, Jews are going to go ballistic. And I don't mean that. I love the Jewish people, but I think with the controversy we have today in the Christian society between those that love the Jews and those that are Christians that love everybody and don't or not specialized toward any one race, is that when they see something like that happen, they wonder about how God could allow a group of people, even though this is your land and these are the borders, and yes, it's 10 times bigger than it is now, to come in and take over a land and murder and rape people, as the books seem to say, or just to come in and put Palestinians and others, displace them, and say that that's okay to do that because this is your land. I think when we read and see things like that, we wonder, you know, why would God do that? And if he does allow that, it kind of makes me wonder, are we sure that that covenant transpires or transfers or transfigurated into the New Testament? So it's a very confusing thing, and it's a very thing that needs to bring Christians together, but they're pulling them apart almost on a daily basis with theories on both sides coming out. That's really what I wanted to say.
Dave, thank you so much. I'm going to let Joel respond, but Dave, I'd like to give you as a gift Joel's book, When a Jew Rules the World, because these issues are addressed in that book. Just hang on, and one of our workers will get your information, and we're going to send that off to you as a gift from us. But how do you respond to that, Joel, when somebody hears that, oh, our people are being raped and pillaged, and there's such disproportionate value systems here? How do you respond to Dave's question?
I would say, first of all, the event that transpired that led to the reestablishment of the State of Israel, they were messy. There's no question about that. And no one would argue with the fact that, you know, the Jews are not perfect. However, I would say that if, you know, referring to just murdering and raping is sort of your immediate picture of the Jewish people, I would say that you've probably been reading a lot of extremely biased narratives. Not to say those things didn't happen, but, you know, if you're talking about American soldiers, you know, the first thing you don't say is, well, they're, you know, killing and murdering and raping and pillaging. I'm sure that some of those things take place, but that's not the overarching, you know, characteristic of the Jewish people, even in that very messy and chaotic period. Another book that I would highly encourage people that are just simply confused about the history and the legal issues is Alan Dershowitz's book, The Case for Israel. It's just a very well done book by a largely secular Jew, Harvard lawyer, law professor, who just walks through so many of the issues and corrects so much of the propaganda because there is an abundance of it. And there's, you know, there's a profound lobbying group funded largely by, you know, the Saudis and that pro-Palestinian narrative, even in the UN and the American education system. And so we need to at least have an accurate, balanced perspective. No one is going to cast Israel as all perfect. They most certainly are not. But we have to acknowledge there is a profoundly biased portrayal of the Jews out there, particularly throughout the Islamic world, but it has very much filtered out into the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, excellent response. Listen, if you're holding on the line, I'm so sorry that we're not going to be able to get to you as our hour is quickly coming to a close. Joel, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on The Line of Fire. The book is When a Jew Rules the World, What the Bible Really Says About Israel and the Plan of God. For $25 postage paid, you can get this hardcover book from Dr. Brown, who will send it to you. All you need to do is dial 1-800-278-9978. For more about Joel Richardson and his ministry, Joel's Trumpet, you can log on to joelstrumpet.com, watch videos, read articles, get his speaking schedule. Joel, it's been a joy to have you on the Line of Fire today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Scott. Bless you.
Bless you too, my friend. Friends, thanks so much for listening in today. I love sitting in for Dr. Brown. Send him a note and say, Scott Volk needs to sit in for you more often. Lord bless you. Have a great weekend.